This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
We officially welcome Vertex Japan Beer and the Fallon Company to its next stage of development. Congratulations to everyone.
Fanfare on Fan Pier today as the Cambridge-based drug company Vertex broke ground on its new worldwide headquarters.
The construction project on the pier in South Boston's waterfront is said to be the largest private construction contract currently underway anywhere in the country. WBUR's Kurt Nikic was at the groundbreaking, and he joins us now in the studio. Hi there, Kurt.
Hi, Meghna.
So the site there has been empty for a long time, and only in recent years has it become bracketed by the ICA's new galleries there on one side and the Moakley Courthouse, federal courthouse. Okay, so that's 13 years old, but on the other side. So what took so long to fill in the blank between the bookends there?
Well, there was a plan to build there, but this is exactly the kind of commercial construction project that just got hammered during the recession and the credit crunch. Other places that had already gotten financing, they went ahead with construction, but if you wanted to put a hole in the ground, this is what was the hardest thing to do in the current recession. And so that's one reason why Boston Mayor Tom Menino was actually singing to himself on the stage today. They held this groundbreaking in a big tent on the waterfront, almost as big as the Bank of America Pavilion. And he was actually singing to himself, thinking about all the meetings he held way back in 2002 and 2003.
This was a piece of property that everybody had dreams about. And to those dreams that we had then, I've been realized this morning.
And it wasn't just Menino, Meghna. I mean, there was just a really big sense of optimism there. They shot confetti, as you heard. And just outside this tent where all these people in suits were gathered were construction workers waiting.
Huh.
1,000 construction jobs.
Well, just briefly, Kurt, the fact that this is the largest construction project, a private construction project anywhere in the country currently underway is super remarkable and says something a little sad about the state of construction in America.
Yeah, well, one of the big reasons that they could finally go ahead and get certainty, the certainty you need to be able to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to build something like this, is because Vertex, this company, this pharmaceutical company is anchoring it, and they have a drug which is now potentially a blockbuster. The developer knows that they're going to be able to pay the $73 million in rent that they're going to have to pay each year, and that gives them the certainty to go ahead and start building.
All right. Well, that Vertex building is going to be two of the planned eight buildings, I believe, on the site. So can you tell us what else is expected to be there?
Sure. So that office space anchors it, 1.1 million square feet. But there are also going to be condominiums. There are going to be retail. There are already some restaurants around there. There are going to be more restaurants. And what's hoped is that this also sort of anchors what the city wants to call the Innovation District, which is what they're calling the Seaport District and, South Station area and Fort Point Channel, where a lot of, computer companies and young startup companies are moving into. It's a very different change from what Fan Pier used to be, because it actually got its name back in the 19th century from ships pulling up on the wharf there, putting stuff on railroad tracks that fanned out to different parts of New England. And so Dave Riley, the president and CEO of Cornerstone Real Estate Advisors, who was at the groundbreaking today, here's what he had to say about that change.
Although Fan Pier will no longer be the connector for shipping and railroads, fanning out from the site will be innovative research, technological advances, cutting-edge solutions.
Well, that is from today's groundbreaking of the Vertex building on Fan Pier, brought to us by WBUR's business and technology reporter, Kurt Nikic. Thank you so much, Kurt.
Sure thing.
As Kurt reported, Vertex's new headquarters on Fan Pier will be part of a huge commercial development project. But it's easy to forget just a few blocks to the east is a working fish pier, a marine industrial park, and of course, the city's deep sea port.
Which brings us to today's talker. What's the best way to develop, or in some cases, reclaim the miles and miles of waterfront in and around Boston?
As companies and residents flock to the waterfront for the views, convenience, and cachet, is it possible or even desirable to maintain a working port? And if so, how do we hold on to the waterfront's industrial infrastructure while making it environmentally safe and pleasant for local communities?
Those tensions are especially acute across the harbor in Chelsea, where we spent some time just yesterday. Hulking rusted fuel tanks still line the waterfront of this working class city. Then there are those giant salt piles that belong to the Eastern Minerals Company, which is planning to expand.
As you approach the Eastern Minerals Company in Chelsea, you can't miss it. Big piles of salt, two of them, covered in red, white, and blue tarps, rise about 50 or 60 feet above Chelsea Creek. This company provides the winter road salt for much of the state.
My name is Paul Carlson. I've worked for the Mahoney family now for 35 years, which is Eastern Minerals. Salt comes from all over the world. I mean, you're aware of that.
Paul Carlson is a manager at Eastern Minerals, which is a pretty straightforward business. Ships loaded with salt come from around the world. The cranes unload them, and the salt is dumped on the pier, where it's stored in these huge piles, until the trucks come and haul it away and scatter it over the roads in winter.
We own our own mine down in Chile. They own a mine in Ireland. But, you know, we go on the outside where we get it through Mexico. We get it as far as Australia.
Really?
On an average ship today, it's usually average right around 50,000 tons.
Wow. You know. Yeah. And so how many shiploads in the course of a year do you guys...
It's a lot.
No one's ever counted that high. So lots and lots of salt. And Eastern Minerals needs more room to store it. So the company bought the property right next door, a former oil depot. Some of the residents objected. They don't like the big piles of salt, the trucking traffic, and the noise, all of which poses this challenge.
In this case, we're looking at how can you have public parks in the middle of a salt dock?
This is Dan Adams, an urban designer and architect who helped draw up a plan for Eastern Minerals. The idea, expand the company along the waterfront so it has more room for all that salt and provide public access to this working industrial waterfront.
It would be very detrimental to lose these operations, but at the same time, of course, Chelsea, Mass wants all the same benefits that, you know, Boston has been recovering over the years, you know, access to the waterfront, community recreation space. I think what'll be really kind of innovative and unique here is that you'll have a really beautiful park. We're going to preserve certain industrial aspects of the landscape, but at the same time, you're going to be able to come down here and, let's say, watch a ship unloading all of the goods coming from Chile onto the shores. And it'll actually make, I think, the park landscape much more dynamic because of its direct participation with this almost like a salt-themed park of sorts.
Dan Adams' expansion plan includes a public waterfront park right next to the salt dock. To get a view of it all, we climb the metal spiral staircase to the very top of one of the huge oil containers that rise high above Chelsea Creek, and which will be taken down to make room for the expansion.
Yeah, I'm going to catch my breath for a second.
Oh, this is fantastic up here, though. So now we're looking over the top of East Boston all the way to downtown Boston and Back Bay, and you can see it all
now,
stretched
unfortunately,
out.
I don't think we'll be able to preserve anything quite this tall in the new public access landscape.
It's a beautiful natural terrain, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. I mean, what that means, I guess, again, as a design perspective, is people live up on these little hills, and they all look down towards the water. The water becomes something I think that's very intimately valuable and intimately connected to the community because everyone's honestly looking at it. You know, it's something they see, and that's part of where it puts the waterfront industries in, you know, a tricky position because they're not out of sight, out of mind. They're right in the community. It's something that people look at, and I think that's something that we need to design. And as architects and planners, we actually have to sort of design and take account for these landscapes and not always push them out of cities because they are very valuable and important to cities, but actually find a way to make them good neighbors, essentially, and design them well.
And that was Dan Adams, an architect and partner at Landing Studio in Somerville, talking with me yesterday in Chelsea. And Dan joins us right now in the studio to expand on some of those ideas. And good to have you, Dan. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And listeners, you can join the conversation. What do you think? What's the best way to develop Boston's waterfront? How do you balance the need for public access and seaside strolls with the needs of a working harbor? Do you think that's happening in Chelsea, in South Boston? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also join the discussion online at radioboston.org, where you can see a slideshow from our trip to Chelsea yesterday. So, Dan, Eastern Minerals has spent years getting the permits to expand. Why is it important to keep a company like this on the waterfront? What is the sort of capacity there that's important to preserve?
Well, I think what we're looking at is a very significant piece of infrastructure, which is Chelsea Creek, which over decades and, in fact, centuries of investment and development has created a pretty efficient thoroughfare for bringing into the goods into the city, the state, and the region. And Eastern Minerals is, of course, using and working with that infrastructure to provide, in this case, the road salt that's used to de-ice winter roadways. And I think where that's highly valuable is that our infrastructure is largely geared on a hierarchy of efficiencies, where the most efficient means of moving large quantities of goods is by the sea, where you can essentially float goods with a very low amount of energy in large quantities, as opposed to something like a truck, which per ton takes a lot more sort of energy inputs. Mm. And so the sort of the closer we can get the goods to a community by the water, the better.
But you talked as well in that little piece with me just a moment ago about this public access landscape. So sort of balancing, I guess, the sort of hardware and the work of a working port with that public access landscape. How do you do that?
Well, I think that's, the tricky question that we're confronting as designers, because I think throughout Boston, throughout Manhattan, throughout contemporary cities in the United States in particular, there's been a good and positive trend that there's new types of access for communities, with parks. And we just heard about this big new development on Van Pier, of course. And so those are, I think, welcome invitations for people to appreciate these landscapes. And then trying to couple that with those pieces of industry that are still critical to our functions as a community. So I think what we're trying to look at in the case of the salt industry is a very nice opportunity, because it's salt. It's a fairly everyday material. It doesn't have some of the same security concerns as some of the other types of industries on the waterfront. So there's a lot of opportunity to really bring people into that landscape. So we've done that through the last few years through festivals on the dock, more kind of temporary installations. And now we're sort of trying to tap into the unique characteristics of the landscape to create a more permanent access for the community.
And of course, Dan, you've negotiated some local concerns which have been expressed over many years in Chelsea about Eastern Minerals and the plan to expand. And let me bring a local voice on, Roseanne Bongiovanni. She directs the Chelsea Green Space and Recreational Committee. And Roseanne, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
So I know we spoke a little earlier today, and I know that by and large you're in favor of what Eastern Minerals is doing, but you haven't always been. What are some of the concerns about this kind of mixed-use thing that's
Absolutely.
Happening there?
Sure. So for many, many years, residents feel as though they're bearing the brunt of the region's benefits in that Eastern Minerals, as we've heard from some of their managers, is bringing in hundreds of thousands of road salt each year into the ports of the Chelsea Creek, and yet the benefits are being received by the rest of the region. Cities and towns as far as New Hampshire and Vermont, Rhode Island, are getting the road salt, but yet we're storing it on a year-round basis. And as Dan and others have said, it's literally abutting residential neighborhoods, very, very densely populated neighborhoods. And folks have been concerned for a number of years about the health effects that the salt may contribute towards for folks who are living in those neighborhoods, such as asthma and the related truck traffic that comes from the industry. So that may be increasing asthma. The dust from the salt and the anti-caking agents that the salt pile has used over the course of the years, just simply the volume of salt is very, very significant that's stored on site. And so residents have been very vocal about their opposition and or concerns to Eastern Minerals for a number of years. Recently, we've tried to work and negotiate with the company so that residents' perspectives are being heard and that Dan and the owners of the company are listening to the residents and really trying to incorporate many of their concerns and suggestions into the expansion of this new site.
Roseanne, we hear those concerns loud and clear. What do you make of what Dan is talking about the sort of vitality of a working port as being an important element to your community?
Sure.
Do you buy that?
I buy certain aspects of it. I think that, again, there needs to be a fair distribution of the burdens. And so for Chelsea residents and East Boston residents as well, we feel as though our community has been slammed with industry. We look at other waterfront communities and say, why can't that be us? Why can't we have a mix of industrial activity with parks, open spaces, restaurants, marinas, et cetera? Until recently, there's been almost no mix of anything other than industry abutting residential development. So we're excited about the project that Dan is proposing in terms of the open space, because it does help to foster that balance. But until a true balance is achieved, We feel like the industry is just right there up against our faces. You know, we don't have any other alternative. So we're leaving Chelsea and East Boston to go and have a waterfront meal, to walk along the waterfront, to run along the waterfront, to visit other parks. So that balance is key, but I think it's going to be many years until we achieve that balance.
Well, Roseanne Bongiovanni, I want to thank you so much for joining us for bringing some of these concerns in the conversations. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Roseanne Bongiovanni. She's the director of the Chelsea Green Space and Recreational Committee. Let me introduce Vivian Lee, president of the Boston Harbor Association. Great to have you in the studio. Thanks for standing by.
Thank you.
So you've been listening to this conversation, and we want to broaden this conversation with your help a little bit. We think of your organization primarily in recent years as being an advocate of, in a big way, of the cleanup of Boston Harbor. But as you reminded me today, of course, you've got this historic relationship with the Boston Shipping Association. So you're the ideal person to talk to about this balance and this mix of things that I think we are hearing from Roseanne Bongiovanni and in a similar way what Dan Adams has been talking about.
We were founded in 1973 by the League of Women Voters and the Boston Shipping Association. And back then, the League was really pushing for the harbor to be clean enough for their children to swim in. They went around to the business community to get their support, not the Chamber of Commerce, not the Associated Industries of Massachusetts, not the bankers. No business group other than the Shipping Association could see the potential of a clean harbor. Mm-hmm. And so our roots really do go back to the balance of having a clean harbor for children to swim in and also for business interests as well.
And how do you think the balance is being handled these days? For example, let's talk about the big news today, Fan Pier. This is a real revitalization of what was formerly a big part of the working harbor. How do you think that's being handled?
I think that it's been an evolution that's taken a long time, but clearly the uses that had been on that site were no longer viable. Mm-hmm. And so through a very long, complicated planning process, which occurred over a couple of decades, you now have a mix of residential, business, as well as cultural uses along this part of the waterfront. And I think throughout the six waterfront neighborhoods of Boston, you are seeing a mix of uses. And certainly in East Boston, and then of course on the other side, Chelsea, you're also getting a discussion about the need for balance as well. Mm-hmm. But both Chelsea Creek and the Lower Mystic tend to be very industrial in nature. And I think what Dan and Eastern Minerals is talking about, providing some of those amenities and temporary access, is very important for the community.
Mm. Dan, I wanted to ask you, and we were talking a little bit about this yesterday, actually quite a bit about this yesterday, where are the examples of waterfront development that concern you, where this industrial capacity is being lost, essentially, unnecessarily, or to the detriment of our society?
Well, it's funny. I mean, just as sort of an example, my partner and I were just doing a project in Manhattan, sort of a future visioning session about the working waterfront. And, you know, we were in ourselves a little stunned to find out, and I don't want to speak too much out of turn. I'd have to verify this for sure, but I'm actually pretty confident that at this point, Manhattan receives every good that arrives in Manhattan arrives by truck. There's nothing coming by rail, nothing coming by ship, which is quite an odd transformation given that Manhattan has a history of a port and the old finger piers the waterfront. So that sort of efficiency of bringing goods into the island by water has essentially been undercut. And so we look at a lot of these really great and fantastic landscapes that have developed there, like the High Line, which is, of course, a former rail line that's now converted into a really great and cool park, or something like the Brooklyn Bridge Park, which is underway in Brooklyn, of course. Another great landscape, beautiful landscapes. But what we sometimes look at and maybe forget is that they're built incredibly robustly, designed to take hundreds of thousands of tons of material immediately off of mega infrastructures, designed in the case of something like the High Line for, in many ways, originally bringing food into Manhattan. And then the question is, when we convert these infrastructures, are they living up to their infrastructural potential? Are they serving the region for which they were once constructed? Or is, in a way, are they even kind of overbuilt for these types of landscapes? And I think that's a really interesting sort of question for these infrastructures. And I guess what we just ask is it possible for them to do both?
Hmm. Listeners, what's the best way to develop or in some ways reclaim the miles and miles of waterfront in Boston? Do you like the mix that you're seeing with some of these developments that we're hearing about in the news? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Clayton, who's calling from Arlington. Hi, Clayton.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Happy to do it. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering that if you know, I feel like if we want the economic support of a harbor in Boston and the industry that comes from it, the jobs, we sort of run into a problem where it's either supporting jobs or the greening of the harbor. And I do support sort of the mixed-use style. I think it's a great direction to go, but I think that what he was just sort of saying, like, can we do both? Your guest said it just now, like, can we do both? And I think that's a really great question. But I wonder, you know, if you look at Germany, who just said no more nuclear, and they're building out their ports to be able to move the type of big green wind farm technology to build off the coast of the sea, to these really massive type of infrastructure projects to move these big industrial products. If we're going to build a wind farm here in our community, are we going to say we want the jobs from those boats coming over? Are we going to build it here and bring it on a train? Like, what are we going to do? And so if we want to move forward in this green, you know, economy we're talking about, building the wind farm, whose community is that going to rail, that line going to run coming through? Is it going to come through a port? And if we want that, do we want those jobs?
All right, Clayton. Well, I think we got the point, and we really appreciate the call. Let me go to Vivian Lee of the Boston Harbor Association. Respond to Clayton.
Yeah, in fact, in our port, we are now making accommodations for green technology. In Charlestown, for example, in the designated port area of Charlestown, there is now a facility that is being built that will test wind turbine blades. It will be one of only two such facilities in the country. And this one will actually be able to test the very, very long blades that we're now seeing made for wind turbines. So I think that this port is evolving to really think about ways that it can accommodate green technology.
Mm. One of the big challenges, it seems to be, or you know, when we talk about mix and balance, it seems like there's a lot of ways we can talk about that. And one of the ways that when you do waterfront development really well, sometimes the consequence is over gentrification and a lot of ordinary folks can't have access to it. Dan Adams, your thoughts about that and whether you see that as a concern as we move down this road toward developing our waterfront, or, and if so, how to deal with it?
Oh, I mean, I think that's definitely a very realistic concern in a lot of these communities. I think just looking at the history of Boston, New York, again, you see a transformation of the people aligned with the transportation of the types of development. I think one of the things I'm always intrigued with something like maritime industrial operations is actually the diversity of people involved with those industries and the amount of secondary sort of indirect job creation. So a lot of times you go to these facilities, you don't necessarily see a lot of people working on them. But actually, when you start sort of looking into their logistics and their operations, you find that sort of the single landing of a ship in Boston, for example, triggers thousands of jobs throughout Boston Harbor, whether it be stevedores, pilots, tug operators, people who bring various goods, food, and water to the ships. And so it creates a huge economic, and what's interesting about those jobs is there's a huge amount of economic diversity in those types of jobs. You know, people making a great deal of money and people making far less money. And so it actually stimulates, I think, a more diverse population in the community, which then it becomes a question of how the community houses and facilitates those diverse people.
Let's go. Oh, yeah, please, Vivian, you're putting up your hand. Yeah. I appreciate your manners. Please, chime right in.
Well, I think going even back to former Mayor Ray Flynn, who was the son of a longshoreman whose mother cleaned office buildings, he was concerned even in the 80s that if our vision of a clean harbor occurred, there would be gentrification. And so he convened an advisory committee that came up with the concept of a harbor walk public access system, which when it's completed will be 47 miles of public access. Right now, we're about 39 miles. And now, under Mayor Menino in Boston, any waterfront development, housing development, has to have between 15 to 20% of affordable housing. And that can include work-live space for artists. It can include now the Innovation District housing, as well as traditional affordable housing as well.
Let's take another call. Let's go to Terry, who's calling from Nahant. Hi there, Terry.
Yeah, hi.
You're on the air. What's on your mind?
All right. Well, thank you for taking my call. First of all, I was a chaplain with Seafarer's Friend for about 3 years, and I have to say that I was incredibly, I felt very fortunate to be able to go down to the waterfront, to go out on the docks, to watch what went on there. And it's a whole world that most people don't see anything of, even though they drive by it.
Mm-hmm.
Every day on Route 1. So I would love to see that be more accessible to people, because it really is interesting, and Chelsea Creek is beautiful. That's the first thing. The second thing is, We've put up such security barriers that, first of all, the guys who work on the ships can't get off anymore. And it's very hard for people from this community to meet the people who work on the ships, and I think we've lost something by doing that. They're hardworking guys that come from places like the Philippines, and they're just wonderful people. But I am wondering how you're going to manage in this planning, because I used to go down to the oil docks too. How are you going to manage security? People are getting very, I think, over-concerned about security.
Sure, it's a good question, Terry, and I got a glimpse of that with you, Dan,
sure.
Yesterday. So we were talking about this public access landscape right next to the salt dock, big ships coming in from Australia. It's sort of Australia, South America, all over the place. Fascinating to watch, but speak to Terry's point.
I should first say Seafarers Friends is a really excellent organization that Eastern Minerals does a fair amount of work with, and I've met a lot of people there, and their role has changed a lot because of this security issues. As I mentioned before, the salt company I almost see as a fairly luxurious industry to be working with, because as opposed to, let's say, something like petroleum, which has a great, and even container terminals, which have a great deal of security restrictions, salt is has far less security restrictions, really in terms of sort of oversight. Security guards are essentially even only required on the dock when a ship is actually at berth. And so in terms of creating opportunities for public access, the salt, because it's relatively benign and considered quite safe in that respect, doesn't have a lot of the same security limitations that other industries do. That said, the public access has to be kind of, in a way, contained somewhat. You know, you can't allow the public to have access to something like the ship's gangway, where mm-hmm. people could be coming and going. But I think this also speaks to a larger sort of issue, that this question of sort of the loss of industry in cities, and what does that mean? Are these things obsolete? Should they just disappear, perhaps? You know, but I think there's even other more kind of cultural questions about notions of cultural exchange, people's awareness about the world and where things come from. I've even been on the dock when Seafarers Friends is there, or let's say a crew, someone on the ship actually has family in Chelsea, and the whole family from Chelsea comes down and gets special permission to go on the ship to see the crew member who's traveled from, let's say, somewhere like the Philippines. And that's a really great moment. And I think back in the day, you know, the crew used to be able to actually get off and go into the cities, participate in the city. And it is very sad to go on board and see guys who, that you know, they want to come on shore, they want to see Boston, and they can't even get off the ship.
Vivian Lee, I mean, I think almost as a sort of final point from you, and we've had some calls that have come in that we haven't been able to put on the air, but this idea of the harbor and the waterfront is providing a sort of educational, cultural opportunity that we should be taking advantage of in big, big ways. How do you think we're doing? Where do you think we're going next with this?
Well, let me give you as an example. On New Year's Eve Day, that is on December 31st, 2010, we actually organized as part of First Night Activities the opportunity for the public to go on a Coast Guard cutter as well as the Boston Harbor pilot's boat. And it was free of charge, docked at the Moakley Courthouse. And I would say we were doing about 100 people an hour. It was extraordinary. And I think more opportunities like what Dan is talking about at Eastern Mineral, and also using other facilities where people can actually interact with Coast Guard people and the pilots, harbor pilots and others, I think is an excellent point. And I would encourage, as developers are developing, to provide enough dock structures so the public can also have an opportunity to interact with those on the working port.
Well, as much access as possible, I'm all for that. Vivian Lee, thank you so much for coming in today. We appreciate it. That's Vivian Lee. She's president of the Boston Harbor Association. And Dan Adams, an architect and partner at Landing Studio in Somerville. He's also an associate professor in the Urban Landscape Program at Northeastern University. Dan Adams, thank you for your time yesterday and for coming back today.
Hey, thanks so much.
And I also want to thank Roseanne Bongiovanni, director of the Chelsea Green Space and Recreational Committee, who we spoke to earlier. Listeners, the conversation continues online at radioboston.org, where you can also see a slideshow of our visit to Chelsea yesterday. And stay with us. Still ahead on the program, author David McCullough and his new book about America's long love affair with Paris. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.